I wonder what Jesus would say today about us sanitizing our hands all the time. Yeah. And just so you know, it's not new, because every time during Mass, watch the priest, and it's going to happen this morning. He washes his hands. This is before COVID. He washes his hands before going into consecration. Now, what's wrong with the Pharisees asking Jesus' disciples to wash their hands? We all tell our kids to wash their hands, isn't it? When they go to the bathroom, wash your hands. Before they eat, wash your hands. What's wrong with that? Why did Jesus pick offense in that? Well, I just want to walk you through briefly a background to that story so that you can gain an understanding as to why Jesus picked on the Pharisees. So 600 years, okay. Looking at the slide, right? Foster was there. Foster was there. Yeah. What? The hat. Oh, smart. Oh, yeah. Yeah, those kids are very smart. So 600 years, stay with me. We're going to do a bit of Old Testament theology this morning. Stay with me. I'll try to keep it short, but interesting, hopefully. So 600 years before Jesus' encounter in today's gospel reading, which is over 2,000 years ago, something happened in Israel. And what was it? After the death of King David, remember the story of King David, how he came to the throne. After settling on the throne, King David wanted to build a temple for God. You remember that story? And God said, no. Oh yeah, you've killed too many people. You're not building me a temple. He says, I'm going to pass on that privilege of building a temple for me to your son, Solomon. Because David wasn't happy, but he was still pleased that it was someone from his own lineage that was going to do that. So King David died. This is 600 years before Jesus. King David died, and then Solomon came to the throne. And as soon as Solomon came to the throne, God told him what he had promised his father. He said, I'm giving you the privilege. At this time, there was no temple in Israel. There was no temple in Jerusalem. So they carried the Ark of the Covenant, which is the sign of the presence of God, everywhere with them. But they had no place for it. That's why David wanted a place. Let's build God a church so that we can keep the Ark of the Covenant in the church. But God said, no, you're not. You don't have that privilege. I'm passing it on to your son. So God said to David, Solomon, you're going to build me this magnificent temple. And in that temple, you put the Ark of the Covenant. And God walked Solomon through every minutest detail of how that temple was going to be built. And I can't remember how many years it took. I have to check that up again. But it took many years. Solomon went through building that temple according to God's instruction. God designed it. God told him exactly what had to be in the temple, the kind of gold he wanted, where it should be situated, where people would be, how many chambers would be in the temple. It was in clear detail how it was going to be. So Solomon followed God's plan and built God this magnificent temple in Jerusalem. And there was a huge celebration that took 3 years. Remember when we were going to open our church too, we had a huge celebration. Father Kevin came here and had it blessed, right? So the celebration took 3 years. And everyone was so excited that finally God was building a home among his people. And God had instructed that the Jews were to worship him nowhere else except in that temple. And it had to be every week, every Sabbath, he says. Just like how it is for us Christians. Every Sunday, we're obligated to come to Mass. God said every week, every Jewish adult was to come into that temple, and he prescribed how worship was to be given to him. Now, they did that for 400 years, worshiping God in this magnificent temple, until something happened. There was a certain king with a terrible name, but obviously another word for him is a demon. He attacked Jerusalem 3 times. His name was Nebuchadnezzar, and he was the king of Babylon. He attacked Jerusalem 3 times. Twice he failed. the Jews were able to rebuff him and fight him back, and then the third time, he was victorious. And when he came in, he sees the king, like what's happening in Afghanistan now. I just wonder what may have happened to their churches by now. And all the priests and the bishops there, only God knows. You never hear that in the news, right? But I'm sure they're the first ones to experience persecution. We need to pray for them. As soon as this Nebuchadnezzar came into Jerusalem, the first place he went to was this temple. Because he knew that the reason behind Israel's success was the Ark of the Covenant, the presence of God. So he went there, destroyed the temple. The king had two sons. He slaughtered the two sons before the Jewish king. And then got all the Jewish male adults, took them with him to his own country, Babylon, and made them, turn them to slaves. So that even those who were left in Jerusalem had no place to worship God, because this magnificent cathedral had been destroyed. They were in slavery for 70 years. No place to worship God. Sabbath came, had no place to go. They felt lost, and they felt unprotected because they felt God was no longer in their lives. 70 years after, another king from Persia rose up against this terrible demon called Nebuchadnezzar, destroyed him and killed him. That was the order of the day in those days. Conquest, right? And killed him. And God used this, not a Christian, not a believer of Yahweh, used him to restore what was lost to the Israelites. The Persian king said to the Jews in Babylon, he said, if you choose to, you are free to go back home. And he granted them permission to go back to Jerusalem and rebuild the walls of Jerusalem and the kingdom. That's how we got to know of the man Nehemiah, who was responsible for rebuilding this temple. So they came back, all excited, back to their land, and they started rebuilding this magnificent temple, which for them is a sign of the presence of God. But as they were building this, they started asking themselves questions, which is what we should be asking ourselves now, as a nation, the entire world. What went wrong? How come God was so mad at us that he allowed the enemy's army to overrun us? And worse still, he allowed Nebuchadnezzar, who does not know the true God, to destroy the temple. We must have done something terrible for God to allow that. And they started this whole soul searching. What was it we did? And they wanted to know what it was so that they don't get to do it again and they don't experience what they experienced for 70 years. So the result of this soul searching was that two spiritual groups came as a result of this soul searching. One group was called the Isaiah group. The other group was called the Ezra group. So the Isaiah group came up. Their thinking or their teaching was backed by the teaching of Prophet Isaiah, which calls us to a renewal, right? Remember the prophecy of Prophet Isaiah. And this group felt that God was mad at them because they turned their backs on God. Their hearts were no longer with God. Even though they went to the temple, they didn't mean what they were doing. They were not in communion with God. They didn't have a good relationship with God. And then they were calling people to come back and bring their hearts. That's why I have that there. Turn their hearts back to God and enter into a better relationship with him. The other group was the Ezra group. The Ezra group came up with this proposition that God was mad at them because they strayed from the Ten Commandments. Because they didn't keep remember the first group was talking about the heart and relationship. The second group was commandments. They said it's because we didn't keep to the minutest detail of the Ten Commandments. And they said, this is what we need to do. If we can keep to the Ten Commandments, then what happened to us in the past will never happen to us again. And the Ezra group became very prominent in Israel and became more prominent than the Isaiah group. So out of that group, there were so many multiplications of the Ten Commandments. Now let's fast forward to the time of Jesus. At the time of Jesus, the Ezra group had won the hearts of the Jewish people. Everyone had come to believe that to please God meant to keep the commandments of God. Now, what's wrong with that? And that was why when The Pharisees saw Jesus' disciples not keeping to the commandments which is prescribed for them in the book of Leviticus, that they should wash their hands before they eat. They were surprised. They said to Jesus, "You are a teacher. What are you teaching your people?" They're breaking the traditions. They're breaking the law. This is what God commanded us to do. How come you're not doing that? How come you're not teaching them to do that? Now, what's wrong with what they said? What's wrong with what the Pharisees said? Of course, this is what it is. What was wrong with what the Pharisees were doing and what they were condemning Jesus' disciples of not doing was the fact that this same thing they did or they were doing was the same thing that their forefathers did 600 years ago that led them to slavery. And that, what was that? Observing, merely observing the commandments of God without prop, yeah, you were going to say, yeah? Yeah, it doesn't come from the heart. Exactly. At the time of Jesus, there were, from this Ezra group, there were 613 rules or regulations that had come out of the Ten Commandments, one of which was what they condemned the disciples of not doing. As I was preparing my homily, I remember this experience I had in 1996, I think, when I first time I went on pilgrimage to, I was just a young priest then, just 2 years ordained, and I got to lead a group from Nigeria to go on pilgrimage to Holy Land. And I remember we were in Jerusalem, and it was Sabbath day. And we came from our rooms. I think we wanted to go somewhere, go have lunch or somewhere. And we were in this hotel that was a seven-story building. And we used the elevator to, you know, to access our rooms and to come down when we needed to. So we went to the elevator, and it was a Friday afternoon. This is Sabbath day. Sabbath starts Friday afternoon, runs until Saturday afternoon. We went to the elevator, we pressed the button, and it wasn't working. We tried everything, it wasn't just working. So we called the front office. We said, "What's wrong? The elevator is not working, or the lift is not working." And the lady said, "Oh, no, 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 it's not bad. The lift is okay, it's a Sabbath day. There is another lift by your right, just use that lift." Guess what? We went to the second lift. And what's the difference between the lift we used before and the second one? This is going to amaze you. The second lift, which is called the Sabbath lift, you stand in front of it, you don't touch a button, the door opens, you get into the lift, there are no buttons there, it runs through all the floors, you get to the floor you are going, the door opens, and you come out. Because according to the Jews, even pressing the elevator button was breaking the Sabbath. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that? Now you know where it came from the Israel group, because they felt that keeping God's commandment was all that it takes. Now, 2,000 years after that, fast forward to us today. Does this story have any lesson for us? I'm sure it does. When I was preparing my homily this week, I said, okay, where's the Pharisee in me here? And I started asking myself, yes, the code of canon law says a priest is obligated to celebrate mass for people, public mass, every Sunday. He's encouraged to celebrate mass, not obligated, every other day. But on Sunday, he's obligated. And I started asking myself, so when I celebrate mass, what is the motivation? Is it the obligation, ticking the box, or is it encountering Jesus in the Eucharist? And when I asked myself, I discovered that, and I've said this before, most of the time, it is ticking the box. And even for me, the good thing about my job is you get to pray to God, pray to God, you get to hang out with God, and you get paid for even praying, right? Yeah, when I celebrate Mass, I get my paycheck from that. So ticking the box, yeah, I need to do that so that I get paid. It's not about where the heart lies or having an encounter with Jesus. Now, that was what Jesus faltered in the argument of the Pharisees. Not that keeping the laws is wrong, but what's the motivation behind it? You guys are here this morning. Why? It's Sabbath, right? Catholics are obligated to go to Mass. For many of us, that's why we're here. Yeah, get it over with, Father. Let's go. That's why you can't go beyond 1 hour, because we need to go. We need to go, Father. We need to go do some shopping or go. We've got sports going on with God. I hope there's no game this morning or this afternoon. Because, yeah, priest is preaching too long. This is an African priest. That's too long. Just tick the box. Let's go. Tick it. What do you get out of it? You come to Mass for 60 years, you get nothing out of it. Why? Because it is an obligation. I've said it before. I hate that word, obligation. I hate it. Please take it out. Don't come here because you're obligated. You know, it's better to stay home. Because you get nothing out of it. Jesus reminds us today that every opportunity we have to relate with God should be an opportunity to encounter God. And he tells us what we need to do to make that encounter possible. He says we need to clean our hearts. And he mentions some of the things that stand in the way of us being able to clean that heart. Of course, one of the things that helps us to clean that is also keeping to the commandments of God. I'm not in any way saying let's flout God's commandment, but I'm saying that every observance of God's commandment, the motivation behind it, the reason behind it is to use that commandment, the observance of it, to help us to enter into a better relationship with Jesus. God calls us today to not tick the box, but look at where our heart lies. When I pray, what's my motivation? When I come to Mass, what's my motivation? Where is my heart? I'm sure for many people, even as I'm talking here, your heart is not here. You're thinking of, yeah, I need to go to Costco today, I need to go do school supplies, I need to go do this, and it's a million things. Just all that is running through your mind. But Jesus says, that's not why we're here. You're here to encounter me, and I can give you the grace to have a clean heart so that you can have a decent encounter with me.